We should probably start with the introduction.
We should. No, we should just cold question. Never say who we are.
Hey guys. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Gumshoe Weekly. Welcome back to Gumshoe Weekly.
The epicenter for murder, mystery, and mayhem. My name is Jen Nittle.
My name is Brianna. And we're your hosts.
I'm the other one. That is, I feel like, the way everyone would describe me, because I don't feel like you say my name frequently enough in the episodes. But they would know it's not whatever I say at the beginning, so they would just be like, the other one. Brianna and the other one. And that's...
You're in the description, though.
That's what I've always described.
I just watched your brain stop working. One of your eyes flickered.
I felt it, too.
Like one of those creepy Barbie dolls?
It was like I was recharging right in that moment, like rebooting.
You were rebooting.
Oh my god. That's what I always strive to be, is the other one. Anyways. So now that we are recording, should we do a question?
I do have a question for you.
Love it.
Would you have sex?
Yes.
With your own clone?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
I know I should be good at it.
You wouldn't test yourself out.
Yeah, I want to see. You know what? I always tell people, this is a little bedroom humor that I do in real life. Anybody listening to this who has had sex with me can attest to it. Anytime someone compliments me in the bedroom, I go, thanks. I get a lot of those on my Yelp reviews. And then I insinuate that I'm getting sex-based Yelp reviews consistently. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or I'll be like, give me 5 stars on Yelp.
Oh my god.
Also, it's always Yelp. I'm never like, my reviews on Google
Tinder.
Or whatever.
So the actual ones.
Always Yelp like I'm a business. Like I'm running a brothel with one star. It's me. Anyways, so yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I want to know how I would review myself on Yelp.
This is true, but would the clone be... Because you can clone something. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be the same thing.
So I could teach it and really start a brothel.
Leave us a Yelp review.
Leave us, the twins, a Yelp review. Also, I find myself very attractive, so I think it would be a good move all around.
Well, there you go.
There I go. Would you?
Yeah. If it's like a full-on clone, I just want to see if there's anything weird that I can't see.
Oh my god. So you're just gonna inspect her like she's another person. It's okay. That's great.
Where did that birthmark come from?
How long has that been there? Why hasn't anyone said anything about that?
Yeah.
Oh my god, you can look at your zipper. Finally.
But it's funny that you say that because I constantly forget that I have that.
The zipper?
Yeah. So I can like really see it in person.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh, there it is.
It's like that weird fact of like you never, the one face you'll never see is your own.
Yeah, because we only see like a mirror of our face.
Mm-hmm. But that's like a distorted image of what we see.
Yeah.
Because they say that I've heard different ones. You're like, you're either 10% prettier than you actually think you are, or you're like 10% uglier than you actually think you are.
God, I
think
it's
the uglier one.
Oh, no.
Like, you think you're prettier than you actually are, and I think it's like the mirror tells you you're prettier, something like that.
The way some of these hoes be acting, I believe it.
Like, I don't fucking know.
Sometimes I will literally say, I am too pretty for you to do this right now.
Your confidence is through the fucking roof, my friend.
I think I said it at work the other day. They were like joking around about something and I was like, I am too pretty for you to be talking like that. So
I'm actually gorgeous.
Also, I'm wearing a full mask, so I really am just the eyes. But also I have piercing green eyes and winged eyeliner. What more do you need from me? God. Freckles, you bitch. It's like a character trait at this point.
It is.
JJ always has her eyeliner winged.
Whereas I'm the complete opposite. They're like Brianna. Always catch her with her mustache out.
Always catch her with her mustache out. It just made me think that if you were in the reverse roles, where you're standing there and I come up talking to you and you turn around and you go full handlebar.
Yeah, man. This is exactly right.
That's...
Because I definitely was at work today washing my hands, and I had my mask down. I was like, oh, girl. You need to take care of your face, though. This mask thing is really making me lazy, bitch.
Well, I have, like, super bad acne right now, and I'm like, I never take my mask off at work, and I'm like, I love this. None of you know. None of you know that I'm 30, and I have really bad acne. It's almost like you forgot...
Like, you know when they do the close-ups of SpongeBob?
No!
Bitch, that's me. He took my mask off and they're like, oh my god, who is this little brown man? There's no striking beauty under here. I just look like a close-up from fucking SpongeBob.
Oh my god.
No handsome Squidward in this place. Should we get into this?
Do we do the next part?
The slap hand part? Rock, paper, scissors. You do it.
No, you do it.
I don't know it.
Rock, send it to you once a week for 50 weeks. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Paper.
Scissors. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock.
Rock.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Paper. Rock. I win. Nah. I want you to go first.
You're the worst.
I know. That's what I feed off of.
Alrighty. So, this week, we decided to do mystery.
Mystery.
Right?
You stared at me like you weren't sure.
I wasn't. I tried to go back through our text and was like, when the fuck did I say? I'm pretty sure I said mystery.
You did.
So, mine's is a little quirky. This is the weird but true story of Dorothy Louise Eady. So Dorothy was born in London on January 16th, 1904. Mm-hmm. She was the apple of her parents, Reuben and Caroline's, eye. They were an Irish lower middle class family that lived in a coastal town. She was their only child, which they absolutely adored. So, at the age of 3, after fatally falling down a flight of stairs, she was pronounced dead at the scene. But something miraculous happened. And an hour later, in her room, they found her playing. So she woke up.
Was she pronounced dead?
She was pronounced dead. So a late...
I mean, this screen.
An hour later, they found her, like, playing in her room.
Shut up. That wasn't her. That was a changeling.
Oh, God. Right in the house.
Yeah.
Soon after this happened, she began to exhibit strange behavior. She kept insisting she would be brought home.
Oh, God, while she was home?
Yeah.
Ew!
She also developed an accent, suffering from foreign accent syndrome. Didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't know either. What is that?
It's like when you start to think that you have an accent and you don't. It's like if I pulled a Madonna and started talking in a British accent because I lived in fucking Britain for like a year.
Oh my god.
Like that. At least that's what I'm guessing it is. I feel like from the name I didn't have to look it up.
You have no idea what it is?
No, but I sounded convincing, right?
You did. You shouldn't have even said anything. No one would have known.
I got the gift of gab. This began to affect her life outside of her home. She went to school, and her teachers asked her parents to keep her away from class, because in Sunday school she began comparing Christianity as a heathen religion to her ancient Egyptian religion.
Oh!
So a little Irish girl started saying she was Egyptian.
The sun gods.
She was even at one point expelled from the Dulwich Girls' School after she refused to sing a hymn that called on God to curse and the swart Egyptians. She was like, fuck out of here. Not with it.
I know, right? What are the odds?
Needless to say, no one knew what her deal was. So after all this weirdness, her parents would get answers from an unlikely place. So one day, her parents took her to visit a British museum, and while walking around, she found a picture in the New Kingdom Temple exhibit. She yelled out, "There's my home. Where are the trees? Where are the garden?" The picture was of a temple, the temple of Sete, the father of Ramses the Great. Excited, she ran around the halls of the Egyptian room, kissing the feet of the statues, calling them her people. After this, she took every chance her parents gave her to visit the British Museum, and on one of her many visits, she met E.A. Wallace Budge, who was an English Egyptologist. He worked at the British Museum and published numerous works on the ancient Near East. He was taken by her enthusiasm because she was such a young kid who was super into all this stuff, and he encouraged her to study hieroglyphics, excuse me. So during World War I, she nearly was killed again during a bombing raid, and she was moved to her grandmother's home in Sussex. There, she continued her studies of ancient Egypt at the library, and when she was 15, she described a nocturnal visit from the mummy of Pharaoh Seti. What the fuck? Her continued weird behavior coupled with sleepwalking and nightmares led her to be incarcerated in a sanatorium several times.
Oh.
So, in 1931, after years of studying ancient Egypt and making it her life's work, she moved to Egypt after Iman Abdel Megoud, whom she met while working on an Egyptian public relations magazine, who by this time had become a teacher of English, and he asked her to marry him. They decided to move to Egypt. This helped gain her citizenship, and they, again, moved to Egypt, like I keep saying.
Yeah. But where'd they move?
To Egypt? Mm. I don't know if you caught it. It's definitely, like, a hard one to catch. Anyway.
I didn't.
When she arrived in the place she moved, Egypt, she...
Where was it again, though?
Brazil?
No. Okay. I thought you said that.
Yeah.
I thought so.
It sounds very similar to Egypt.
I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's called Egypt. A little
place called Egypt?
It's a little big place called Egypt.
She kissed the ground and announced she had come home to stay. The couple stayed in Cairo, and her husband's family gave her the nickname Bulbul, which means nightingale. Their son named Sete.
Seti,
but it's with a Y, so it's S-E-T-Y. Real original. From which derived from her popular name, Om Seti, mother of Seti.
Om Seti?
O-M-M.
Oh, okay.
Om?
Om, yeah.
She continued to report apparitions and out-of-body experiences during this time, which caused friction with the upper-middle-class family she had married into. She reported nighttime visitations by an apparition of Aura. He slowly, during these visits, dictated to her over a 12-month period the story of her previous life. When written out, the story took up 70 pages of cursive hieroglyphic text. It described the life... Yeah.
I guess that's not much if it's describing your whole life.
I guess. But it's also hieroglyphics. I feel like that's, like, lot. I mean, I guess it's not... I guess, I don't know. It described the life of a young woman in ancient Egypt called Bentrishit, who had reincarnated in the person of Dorothy Edie. Bentrishit means harp of joy, is described in this text as being of humble origin. Her mother, a vegetable seller, and her father, a soldier during the reign of Sete, which was 1290 BC to 1279 BC. That doesn't sound right.
If it's BC, yeah, BC goes backwards, I think.
Oh, didn't know that.
Because it goes up to 1, and I don't know why or how. How'd you know what year to start on? I think there'll be 1379 of these. And then we'll do something else.
Yeah, okay, I didn't know that. Okay, so when she was 3, her mother died, and she was placed in the temple of Qom el Sultan because her father could not afford her.
Oh.
There, she was brought up to be a priestess, and when she was 12 years old, the high priest asked her if she wished to go out into the world or stay and become a consecrated virgin.
Oh.
Without a full understanding and without a practical alternative, she took the vows. She learned the role in the annual drama of Osiris's passions and resurrection, a role that only virgin priestesses consecrate to Isis could perform. One day, Sete visited and spoke to her. They became lovers, eating the uncooked goose, an ancient Egyptian term that has been compared to eating the forbidden fruit. So it sounded like they fucked.
Eating the uncooked goose could not be more unpleasant sounding. I will never eat the uncooked goose with anyone.
When Ben Trishit became pregnant, she told the high priest who the father was. The high priest informed her that the gravity of the offense against Isis was so terrible that death would be the most likely penalty at trial. Unwilling to face the public scandal for Sete, she committed suicide rather than face trial. I guess that's real love, guys. Dorothy and her husband divorced in 1936. So flash forward. In 1936, she divorced her husband. She moved to a village near the Giza Pyramids with her son Sete and found work with the Egyptian Department of Antiques, which was the start of a really long career in Egyptology. She participated in digs, made copies of artwork, and even wrote papers, working with leaders in the field such as Salem Hassan, Ahmed Fakhari, and Labib Habachi. She was very well respected in the community. In 1952, she made her first visit to Abydos at the temple that Sete had built. She said that she felt as if I'd walked into a place where I'd lived before. In a test set by the chief inspector of the Egyptian Department of Antiques, she claimed to have been able to locate certain scenes depicted on the wall murals in the complete darkness. Pitch black, she found them no problem. She also marked the location of the garden she had recalled, where a dig later revealed ancient tree stumps. She remained in Abydos to the end of her life, helping with archaeological works at the Temple of Sete and other sites, and later working as a tour guide. Like, she hit 60, and they were like, yeah, girl, you gotta retire. And she was like, how about no, though? Because she didn't want to retire. She was like, I'm going to keep working, even though that was their age that they cut people off.
Mm-hmm.
So she became like a tour guide.
Okay.
It was here she acquired the name she is best known for, the Am Sete, meaning Mother of Sete. Because it was customary in Egyptian villages to refer to a mother by the name of her eldest child.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Don't get to be your own person anymore.
Nope. Am Sete died in April 21st, 1981, and was buried in the desert near the local Coptic cemetery. They wouldn't allow her to be buried in the tombs that she loved and helped explore, pretty much.
That's sad.
But my thing is, like, who are you really?
That's true. That's also true.
In a 2015 paper, archaeologist Nicholas Reeves argues from clues in wall artwork and decorations, the burial chambers of Nefertiti lies adjacent to the tomb of King Tut. Boom.
Boom.
He stated Am Sete had at least partially inspired this notion, as Reeves quotes her in a paragraph saying, "Now about the tombs of Nefertiti," Am Sete continued, sounding a bit hesitant. "I did once ask His Majesty, Sete, meaning, where it was, and he told me, he said, 'Why do you want to know?' And I said, 'I would like to have it excavated.' And he said, 'No, you must not. We don't want anything more of this family known.' But he did tell me where it was, and I can tell you this much. It's in the Valley of the Kings, and it's quite near to the King Tut's tomb. But it's in a place where nobody would ever think to look for it," she laughed. "And apparently it is still intact." So she knows all of this information that nobody else knows. And it's all from a little 3-year-old Irish girl hitting her head. And that's the story of Dorothy.
Dorothy.
Edie. Dorothy Edie.
I can't get over the fact that she was pronounced dead. And then an hour later she's like, "I'm good though."
It's chill, don't worry.
It's chill. Get out of my face. and then forever just lived as... I think it's too long for anyone to be like, oh, it's a fun game. She literally lived her whole life like that.
Yeah, like, she changed her whole... Like, she never left Egypt ever after she moved there. She literally wrapped her whole life around this study. I don't know. So I guess the question is, do you believe in reincarnation?
Ooh. If you can believe in ghosts, you have to believe in reincarnation.
This is true.
But also, what kind of reincarnation is that unless her, like, spirit was already in there? Because if you die...
That's what I was saying, too. At what age?
She came back to life. It's not like she was, like, somebody resuscitated her and then Drop Dead Diva situation. I don't know if you've seen that show.
No.
A girl dies at the same time. A woman dies in a shootout at the same time as another woman dies in a car crash. The woman in the car crash is in heaven. She's like, I'm not dying. I'm engaged. And he's like, you are dead, though. It's actually the main guy from Superstore is her angel. But he's like, you are dead, though. And she hits the reincarnate button or whatever it is, the redo, whatever. It's like a blue button on the keyboard. And she leans forward and hits it really quick. So she goes back, but she thinks he's going back to her body. She goes back to the body of the lawyer who just got shot.
Oh.
And then it's a really fucking amazing show because then she plays as this person forever. She never goes back to her old body.
Yeah, I feel like you can't.
No, she can't. Her body was dead.
But that's so what
maybe,
I mean.
Okay, so maybe, you know what, now that I've said it, it must be a Drop Dead Diva situation.
I feel like that's, yeah, exactly. I feel like there's just too much to know. Like,
yeah.
Is it that you die and anybody who's like, ooh, gotta get your body? You know what
I'm
I mean?
Coming.
Is it that kind of situation? Because then it also makes me sad, because what actually happened to Dorothy?
Aww.
Like, who her real person was. Mm-hmm. Like, her personality. What happened to that? Mm-hmm. Did she actually die? And there was a little inkling, and then fucking Ben Shatra was like, bitch, I'm in there.
I'm here.
Oh, you lose. Out of here. Move your feet, lose your seat.
Lose your feet, lose your seat. Wow. That's how reincarnation works, folks. If you move it, you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. If you don't use it, you lose it. Ew. Are you ready for my story?
Mm-hmm.
Today I have a twofer for you guys.
I was going to make mine a twofer, and then I was like, this is actually already really long.
I know. I wish I hadn't. It was too late. It's one story that connects to another. So what do you know about Jerry Sandusky?
Isn't it the dude who's, like, touching little boys? That's all I know.
He's a boy toucher.
But he was, like, a coach. I guess I won't get too into it. I think you'll get too into it.
Gerald Arthur Jared from Subway, though.
Ew, same also, little boy toucher.
Also one.
A terrible human.
It's all connected. Mm-hmm. Gerald Arthur Sandusky, a.k.a. Jerry, was a college football coach that was widely celebrated for his work with Penn State University. In 1977, he founded the Second Mile, a nonprofit charity serving unprivileged at-risk youths. You love those terms. Unprivileged at-risk youths.
Oh my God. Everybody needs a savior.
Say the words that you really mean and move on, because we know you don't mean underprivileged at-risk youths. So, this charity, it is revealed in 2011 after a 3-year investigation, was just a front he used to select victims.
Like a pedophile.
He would approach potential victims, which were boys without fathers, around the ages of 8 to 12 years old.
Oh.
Groom them with gifts and football games, and begin to casually touch them, which inevitably led to unwanted sexual physicality that he employed mostly in the locker rooms. Mm. He was charged with 52 counts of sexual abuse to young boys for over 15 years, from 1994 to 2009.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
52. Jesus.
Yeah,
and that's only the ones that came forward. That's not even, like,
exactly.
All
that's
of
what
them.
I was thinking, too. Because they were like, we have identified, like, 12 victims. And I'm like, so really there's, like, 40?
Yeah.
You also have to think, like, the reporting rate for children and the reporting rate for men, like, it's not... Plus, they have the TV shows about it all the time, like Criminal Minds, SVU, where nobody wants to come forward because they're like, I'm a grown-up now. And they're like, yeah, but you weren't. And they're like, yeah, but I'm an adult now and I'm not gay. And they're like, literally, what? But it doesn't matter.
I mean, yeah.
Because it's your trauma, I guess. So you do what you do with it. But I'm just saying there's obviously a lot. So one of the prosecutors on his case said this about him once he did the closing. It is the remarkable ability to conceal that makes these crimes so heinous. He used manipulation through his charitable acts to hide what he was really doing. He described him as a dangerous child molester who should never be allowed to be free again. So he's in jail now, and his earliest release date is October 2042. He'll be 98 years old.
Hopefully he's dead.
Yeah, well, they were basically like, originally he could have gotten like 378 years, but he got 60, which was still a life sentence for how old he was. So, through Megan's Law, they actually ruled him a sexually violent predator, which is a newer thing that they can do, which gives you, like, a way more strenuous hold with the law, because every 3 months you have to, like, report where you live, and you have all these other things you have to do as well. So, now, that's a little background, because the Sandusky case ties to my story. My victim was a defense attorney for Pennsylvania, and years before the Sandusky case broke, in 1998, he knew what was going on and decided not to move forward with a case against him. So he knew about the abuse claims. Mm-hmm. But they did say that, a lot of people that know him say that he probably just didn't have enough for a substantial case and he would have pursued it if he could have. That didn't become public knowledge, though, until a few years after the incident. So, Ray Gricar, which was a DA for Pennsylvania from the years 1985 to 2005, he was elected and reelected 5 times until he announced his retirement in 2005. He was popular in his area, which is why he kept getting reelected, and he handled a healthy amount of big cases. The Sandusky case and his uninvolvement in it led people to believe that there was a thread connecting it to the fate Ray soon met. July 15th, 2005, Ray calls his girlfriend Patty Fornicola at 11:30 a.m. He had gone on a brief road trip that day to shop for antiques instead of working, period. He informed Patty that he was passing through Brush Valley and that he was not going to be working that day. Mm-hmm. However, when he didn't show up that afternoon, she waited until the evening to involve the police. The fear was that he had gotten into a car accident. Mm-hmm. They don't find his car, his red Mini Cooper, until the next day, and it was parked in an antique store parking lot, abandoned. His county-provided cell phone was locked inside of the car, but the keys were missing. Mm-hmm. Once they breach, they see that his wallet and laptop are missing as well. So they don't find any signs to indicate foul play, but they did find a cigarette smell and cigarette ash on the passenger side floor mat, which is odd because he doesn't smoke and he hated cigarettes. So there are certain parallels people notice between where he parked his car adjacent to the two bridges over the river and where his brother Roy, who went missing in 1996 and was later found dead by suicide, had parked his car before taking his own life.
Oh.
So.
Oh, wow.
Sure, in parallels.
Yeah.
The local police exhausted every lead that came through, even using sniffer dogs, that led them to believe that he'd gotten in someone else's car right after parking his own. But these didn't heed many results. The FBI ran his cards, phone, and accounts, but found no strange activity. On July 30th, like a month and a half later, fishermen recover a waterlogged laptop in the river with a missing hard drive. They believe this to be Ray's laptop and they scramble to find the hard drive, but it takes them 2 months to locate it on the banks of the river, 100 yards away from where the laptop was found. So it looks like they were intentionally separated. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it is too damaged for even the FBI to extract any useful information from it. However, we do find out in 2009 from the Bellefonte police that his home computer had these searches in the history. How to wreck a hard drive, how to fry a hard drive, water damage to a notebook computer.
Oh, how very specific.
Yes. Why did he get rid of his computer, and what was on it? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people, you know, there's a bunch of theories back and forth of where he went, what happened to him, but the overwhelming thing is, whoever got rid of his computer obviously was Googling how to get rid of it before they got rid of it. Wildly suspicious. So there are multiple theories. The three prevailing theories are the first one, the Sandusky theory, which is that they think that he was either killed to silence him, so he wouldn't come forward with any information about the Sandusky case, or he was killed by one of the somebody who had a relation to one of the victims for not coming forward about it. That one they don't find to be super likely. There's also the suicide theory. They think that he might have killed himself as his brother Roy did. Also, their names were Ray and Roy. Very confusing for a person trying to research. So, they think he might have killed himself. However, he didn't have any history of depression, mm-hmm. anything like that. And he had even commented when his brother had killed himself, he'd commented how he couldn't believe that he would leave his sons behind. And Ray had a daughter who he was very devoted to. So they didn't think that he would have done that. Also, they never found a body. And there was even a guy who had been talking about it, one of his coworkers or a person who had known him, had said that he didn't ever believe that it was a suicide because he was like, isn't...
This chair always freaks me the fuck out. Almost fell and died just now.
He was like, isn't the whole point of a suicide to be them finding you, to be like the last act, and they find your body, though? Like, that's the whole thing, is they find your body. It's never, I just disappeared, we don't know where I am. That's not really the suicide MO. Mm-hmm. So, the third main theory is that he was killed by, Oh, no, the third main theory...
Again, your brain just stopped working, your eye flickered a little bit like a weird Barbie.
I'm a robot!
It's like an Austin Powers with the robot.
Yeah, and you're like... I just watched Goldmember literally last week. I fucking
wish. Now that you say that, I did too. I watched that one and the end of the one right before that.
Oh, man. Eat my skin! Eat my skin, Beyonce! Oh, God, I started to sound like the vibe guy for a minute there.
Love him. Not a vibe.
Not a vibe! Anyway. What the fuck am I talking about? The third theory is that it was planned. He left. He wanted to start new somewhere. But there's so many holes in that one that nobody fucking believes that one.
Yeah, because it was the daughter he was devoted to and all that stuff.
And he didn't have money. They were like, maybe he was liquefying his assets. Mm-hmm. But he was divorced twice. He had a daughter who was going to college. He was living with his girlfriend in his girlfriend's house. Mm-hmm. But it's the money. Everyone's like, where did it go? But then some people are like, you shouldn't be worried about where it goes. But when last tax reports, all of his assets totaled to $1,000.
Oh my God.
And he was a lawyer.
Where does all his money go?
Exactly. I feel like it's a fair question to ask. Yeah. So.
Unless. Mm-hmm. Aliens.
It could be. We don't know. So,
it's not ruled out.
Yeah. But a lot of people with the walking away, they were like, why would he abandon his friends and family? Why would he leave if he was retiring? And why wouldn't he talk to anyone for 15 years? So then there's the one other thing, which I found in an article by... Hold it. Also, I got a lot of this information from Reddit, Wikipedia, and... Wallace McKelvey, he's dedicated. Mm-hmm. He's dedicated to the cause. Okay, so, Wallace McKelvey... He did the fucking footwork. He's been working on the case. Well, he worked on it. He wrote on it when it originally happened, and then he did an anniversary piece, the 15-year later piece. But for, 3 years straight, he was just investigating it, and he found someone who he calls the informant.
Okay.
And the informant says that they were incarcerated at the time, right? Shortly after the murder. Right. And he has a cellie who says that the cellie was involved with, they're kind of the fixer guy. The fixer. Guy is not implied. I mean, guy is implied. You don't need it in there. So he said that he used to work with his friend as the fixer for these mobs and stuff like that. Whatever. Criminal syndicates. You know the works. Movies, blah, 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 drama. So, he told him that he had... Okay, so he had a female acquaintance lured Ray to the street with the promise of connecting him with information about this drug ring that he had just announced the month previously that he was investigating with the, like, general investigating guy. Because he's the DA on it. Anyways, he had announced that he was going to investigate this really big drug ring in the area. And so they said that she was paid to tell him that she had information about it. Come over here, I'm a CI, whatever the fuck.
Like a trap kind of person.
Yes. So then they went to a nearby motel in her car, which would explain him getting in a car. And apparently one of them broke Ray's neck and they put him in the trunk of a car and then they took him to Gameland and dumped his body down an abandoned mine shaft submerged in water.
Oh, wow.
Yes. A lot of people,
Does anyone know if she was a smoker?
We don't know. She also is dead now.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyways, from what the gist of what I got from there was that they had tried to investigate it, but they didn't, the cops had tried to investigate it, but they didn't find it plausible. And so they didn't go much further into it. But that seems the most believable to me.
That would make sense.
It would account for his body being, like, so, so missing.
Mm-hmm.
So missing.
So missing?
I also, but I, the thing that really gets me, though, which is the thing that originally turned me onto this, like, 6 months ago, when I first heard of this story, was the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then him Googling it at home. How to fry a hard drive. How to wreck a hard drive. What was on the hard drive? And his nephew had even driven the path that Ray had been on, because he drove up, like, 192, Route 192 or something, and he said that he had driven the path to see if somebody would be able to throw a laptop through a window, a car window, and get it into the lake, and you can't. So, I mean, there are a lot of other things you could do, but it's just, there are just a lot of things that don't.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So that's my whole story, and I'm sticking to it. I got all the information I needed. But that's what I'm thinking, is that last one. However, it was very interesting. That's why people keep coming back to it, is either people who are interested in the hard drive angle or people who are interested in the Jerry Sandusky angle. Because they're like, why didn't he come forward? Why? But a lot of people are like, he probably just didn't have enough evidence to do something about it. Which I, you know, I tend to believe. That sounds believable to me.
No, that was a good one.
Very mysterious, this episode, you guys.
No answers to anything.
I don't have anything for you, and neither does Brianna.
Nope. Google it.
Google it.
You do the work.
You know what? You go to Egypt. It's not that easy.
No.
You need a passport and stuff.
We're very aggressive to our listeners.
And traveling isn't really allowed right now, so I don't know why you would even suggest it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry I got real with you guys for a second there. I love you. I'm in love with you. I have feelings for you.
Oh, God. Let's end this. Let's get out of here.
Anyways, if you'd like to see pictures of me, your future wife, they're on our Instagram and our Twitter at...
Gumshoe Weekly.
Our Facebook at...
Gumshoe Pod.
And if you want to email your second future wife, Brianna, you can do that at...
GumshoeWeekly@gmail.com. Well,
the emails are not actually welcome. She is someone's future wife right now.
Oh, yeah, guys. I got engaged.
She got engaged. Mazel tov.
Mazel tov. I now have a fiancé.
I have a fiancé.
No, that's what I say. That's how I say it. This is my fiancé.
This is my fiancé. I love it because you go a little bit Snape. It's Leviosa.
Okay, bye.